This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program for the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. Want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Walter Koenig, Chekhov from Star Trek, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Risk is our business.
It's like nothing we've dealt with before.
By golly, Jim, I'm beginning to think I can cure a rainy day.
I can't change the laws of physics.
Now in standard orbit, sir.
Welcome, everyone, to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated podcast that covers the original and new cast of Captain Kirk and the Enterprise. I am Ken Tripp.
And I am Zach Moore, and this week we discuss the evolution of the Klingons in the original series, the movies, and the Kelvin timeline, and present our own thoughts on how this powerful enemy has changed over time in both appearance and culture.
Yeah, Zach, you know, I think it'll be fun, especially with Discovery being such a focus now, to move from how we met the Klingons in Errand of Mercy through a few different episodes. I think the last time we saw them was Day of the Dove, if I've got everything in order in my head correctly, which I may not and will be corrected, through the motion picture, through the movies, and even into the Kelvin timeline. And I think it's important to discuss how both DS9 and Enterprise decided to address the physical changes versus what I thought, and still do, was simply a reinterpretation of the Klingons.
Yeah, with the Klingons' new look in the motion picture, it was always Gene Roddenberry's intention that they always look that way. Like, there wasn't some augment virus or some explanation. It was just, hey, look, guys, we have a budget now. We can make these aliens look, you know, more alien. Which I mean, let's face it, the Klingons in the original series, they have some of them have darker skin makeup. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't. We can talk about that. And then they have, you know, goatees, kind of a Fu Manchu look, and that's it. And they have like a golden vest, and that's the extent of the Klingon makeup. And it's they're unrecognizable, indistinguishable from humans. If you have a non Star Trek fan who knows nothing about Star Trek, and you show them a picture of a Klingon, they'd be like, "Well, what is that? Is that a person?" Like, they wouldn't even know that was an alien, you know.
Right.
So when you get a budget for the motion picture, it's like, okay, look, this is like our number one bad guy. They appeared more than any other alien race in the original series. And let's make them alien, you know. Let's show off their ships. Let's show off their language. Like, it was a complete, like, it was unrecognizable. I can only imagine if the internet was around in 1979, what the reactions would have been towards like the trailer. I don't know if the Klingons were in the trailers or not over the motion picture, but, mm-hmm. but that,
yeah,
and then
were.
Actually the movie. So you were contemporary with motion picture. You saw it when it came out.
Right.
You remember the trailers. Like, was there any buzz around that? Or I guess, again, like, there wasn't really a fan culture that waited for immediate reaction, I guess, at the time, huh?
Yeah, I think, like I said at the beginning, that it was definitely a reinterpretation, but we loved it because, you know, Star Trek, which throughout its history, you know, struggled with budget, struggled with effects. I mean, they were fine for its day. And then in this motion picture, it's like they completely, you know, got to say, they didn't really change the design of the Klingon warships, but they certainly made them sexy, right? And that's kind of what they did with the Klingons themselves. And so I don't remember there being a negative buzz. In fact, I think a lot of people really liked the new concept, and they used the Klingons to advertise the first Happy Meal.
That's right.
You know,
so we talked about that before.
yeah, we did, and it was kind of a funny commercial. You can YouTube that, and it is kind of cool. So, you know, there was a lot of there was a lot of buzz about them. I think the only thing that probably a lot of us were expecting because of the trailers and so forth is that we were going to see a lot more of them. And of course, I mean, they started off in the film and they weren't in very long. Played a pivotal role. I can speak well, and you know, it worked out fine. But You know, if we go back, Zach, right, we remember the Errand of Mercy where we're introduced to John Calicos and you know, we're just told by Kirk and the rest before they even arrive on Organia that these are some badass folks, right? You don't mess with the Klingons. They're warlike. They're hungry. They do terrible things to nuns, widows, orphans, and puppies, right? They are just despicable people. And they really were a very intimidating, I thought, enemy in how they were introduced. And, you know, it kind of goes back and forth throughout the series. But when you remember that first episode, and I don't know if you've seen it, you know, in chronological order when you first watched TOS or anything, but what was kind of your impression of the Klingons and where do you think it went during the TV series era?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because actually Standard Orbit 179, I had your sash. Mm-hmm. Me and Justin Oster from Earl Grey actually talked about Errand of Mercy and all the just everything that goes along with it.
Right.
We focused in on that episode, the first appearance of the Klingons. But I had that is an episode that I am actually not that familiar with. I guess it wasn't on my parents' VHS tapes when I was growing up or whatever. So actually, I've probably seen that like less than like three times ever, which for me. It's like not a lot for a Star Trek episode.
I have to go back now and look at your contract. Can you actually do a TOS podcast having only seen one specific episode less than 50 times? I don't. That could be a problem.
I'm like, oh, the Klingons were in season one? I didn't even know that. Who's core? But revisiting it, they you know, John Colicos really defines. You can see like everybody said, oh, that's what a Klingon is. And everybody mm-hmm. after him in the original series pretty much modeled themselves after that. But there was, you know, I did like this. There was some variety in the original series Klingons. They weren't, I know they have a criticism of the later era. It's like, oh, they're all just these samurai Viking warriors who's honor and glory, and that's all they care about. But there are some, and you know, there's some exceptions, you know, the exceptions that prove the rule in the later years, like Gowron and Martok. They all have their own personality. And if you look at TOS, Kor certainly has his own personality. He forged where the Klingon is. Koloth is very different. He's kind of mm-hmm. jokey, you know. Yeah. And a lot of it comes from the actor, William Campbell, who played Trelane.
Right.
But so they didn't care about recasting back then. But it's like if they had Q play like a Romulan on The Next Generation. It's just bizarre to me that Trelane played a Klingon the next year, huh, Ken?
yeah, it was different. It was different. But he pulled it off, you know.
Oh, no, I think so. But he had, you know, that's my point. Like he had a, mm-hmm. a kind of different air about him. He was more jokey, kind of back and forth with Kirk.
He had a very distinct voice and characteristics, mm-hmm. right? So that, you're right, when he was in the Klingon makeup, you're kind of like, yeah, okay. But, you know, he was still a devious, and he sparred well with Kirk, I thought.
Yes, well. Sparred. Yeah, back and nice, good back and forth between them. And then, of course, Kang. You know, Kang was a more like Kor, but he had a different shade to him, too. He was a little more, I think he's the classic more honorable Klingon, if you look at the original series. And then you got these other random Klingons here and there. But they were all different enough, or you didn't. They were just generic, and that's why fans remembered them. So when Deep Space Nine brought them back, you know, 25, 30 years later, like there was a reason to do it, and they were all distinctive enough where it wasn't just the same character three times. Mm-hmm. So I do feel like even though visually they were more generic, personality wise they were less generic. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. And yeah, you know, I thought they were a good villain. I know who they represented, right? It was Cold War, kind of a combination of the Russians and the Chinese with kind of a Japanese flair from World War II. And you know, they were fine. And you know, I like I said, it was interesting because the way the fans take the changes that, you know, and making sure that everything lines up. There's little room for, I guess, as we say, modern reinterpretation as things come down the pike. So then, well, when we jump from the original series to the motion picture,
which by the way, Savage Curtain was the last time we saw the Klingons. Savage Kalas.
Oh, that's right. Okay. So. Yep. Good call out there, right, Kalas? Yeah. And when they flipped it to the motion picture, you got a lot more specifics, you know, in the documentation and the press releases of that movie. You know, the reason that they had the ridges or whatnot was their brain was in backwards. So where our spine hits, you know, at the base of the neck, their spine begins in the forehead. And that's what created the ridges going back. And that's why none of them had hair over that area mm-hmm. of their heads. And it was, it's okay, you know, it makes, when you saw that and they explained it, it made sense. I think a lot of that got lost for whatever reason, you know, as the shows evolved and the movies evolved. But, you know, you still had that general look, you know, that the big head with the ridges and all that stuff.
If you look at, yeah, no, that makes sense, because if you look at the motion picture, they all look pretty much the same. They have it's perfect how you describe it, because that's how they describe it. Like, it's the spine that goes to the forehead, mm-hmm. and that's just part of the biology. Now, when they got to Star Trek III, they kind of reinterpreted. They kind of had the turtle head
right.
Makeup, which carried on all the way through, you know, the end of the, you know, the Voyager era. And that did give every Klingon kind of more distinct, like, you know, it's like a giraffe, right? Has the different spots, every one, right? That's how they kind of approached right. it. Like, every Klingon has a different forehead. And that's cool and all. And I guess it makes it's this weird balance between less generic and more generic, right? So we're talking about here. I didn't really think about that, how that travels across all aspects of them. But yes, all the foreheads are different, but then you're like, why? Well then why do they have these foreheads? it kind of undercuts the clever explanation of why they look that way from the original redesign. And now it's like, oh, everybody just has a different looking forehead, et cetera, et cetera. So.
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, when you had Roddenberry at the helm of things, for better or worse, he was very specific as to why things were. And he would have the updated, you know, so-called show Bible or whatever, you know, and on all of the things, you know, had to be followed a certain way. I think that's why the motion picture is so structured. And then you move into the other films, and it was more about the story, and there wasn't a lot of, yeah, who cares about canon so much? Let's just tell a good story mm-hmm. type of thing. And I think that's permeated right into, you know, Star Trek 09. It's definitely part of Discovery now. And I think that's actually fine, because I think it just shows a different lens. You don't have to get into multiple universes and all this other stuff like we do with comic books. It just allows you to see things a little bit differently. And I think that's probably what's happening with Discovery, because a lot of people are asking, well, what about the human-like Klingons? And I think the producers of that show going, we just showed you how we created the human-like Klingons.
Right.
So it's pretty interesting. Well, now, on a lot of these things, I could be wrong and have been, but we'll see.
I think part of the conflict is they had a pretty genius explanation in the motion picture for why the Enterprise looks different. Like, hey, we just refit this ship. Mm-hmm. You know, no, it's a totally new Enterprise. It's, you know, it's unrecognizable,
right?
To a degree, right? I mean, you can see it's the same basic.
It's the design. It's similar.
Like, it's the design. Shapes, obviously, yeah. You know, they've upgraded all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an in-universe explanation for why the ship looks different, right?
Right.
Like, everybody's like, oh, okay. Oh, and they got new costumes because the military changes uniforms. So military, you know, whatever. So went there, didn't mean to.
It's
but
quite,
they changed
right.
they change costumes and uniforms and whatnot. So it's like, okay, I'll allow that, you know. And then you see a lot of things you haven't seen before. You know, you're like, okay, that's fine. We haven't seen that before. That doesn't contradict anything. But then you have the Klingons, you have seen them before. And it's like the ships, you can kind of like okay, I guess we're just seeing the ship in high definition or whatever, so that's fine, that's why it looks, but it's the same looking ship, you know. But mm-hmm. then you see them and you're like, okay, why they look different? Like, there's not, and that's why Star Trek fans are always looking for, like, they're always looking to fill in the gaps of explanation, tying stories together, tying characters together, tying backstories together, shrinking the universe for better or for worse, right? Everything has to be connected and explained. And when everything else in the movie was explained, I mean, it's like half the movie is about the Enterprise having been refit, and it's totally new, and Kirk doesn't know how stuff works, et cetera. It's a huge plot point
right.
of this upgrade. And then you just kind of throw, oh, yeah, by the way, the Klingons look totally different, too. No explanation. That kind of, I think that doesn't jive so well. I do wonder if they just had said, they haven't even gone with the refit thing. Like, hey, look, this is the Enterprise now. This is the way it was always meant to look. And when you think back on it, think of it that it always looked this way, and we'll just move forward. And I wonder if they did that. There, and didn't try to explain so many other things and let the Klingon thing up, you know, up in the air, there wouldn't be such an obsession by fans and eventually the franchise itself to explain why there was a change in appearance.
Yeah, well, I think that as part of the fan base back then, I don't think it bothered us very much. You know what I mean?
It was a simpler time.
I honestly believe that that is a piece of it. Now, obviously, I'm not speaking for everybody that, you know, was around back then and saw things evolve. I think for a lot of us, it was just a lot of fun seeing Star Trek right up there with Star Wars as far as budget, as far as, you know, upgrades and all this other stuff. And it kind of legitimized the fact that, yep, you know, we had our aliens too or whatever, and this is what they really look like. And, you know, like I said, I'm not speaking for everyone. There could have been a lot of people from my era that saw things differently. I just never heard about it, right? It was never at the conventions or whatnot. I never heard questions around that focus point. Well, why are the Klingons different? Why are we treating them different? It just wasn't part of it. And I almost wonder if, as time went on and people got hooked on TNG, and of course, you know, there was no mention of any augmentation or anything, and Klingons just continued to show up looking the way they do. And that happened again in DS9. In fact, even in Voyager, right? When they pulled Kang back.
In flashback,
he looked like a modern-day Klingon, as did, you know, all the others.
There is an episode, I think it's called Prophecy? I don't know, my Voyager knowledge is not as encyclopedic as some of the other series, but mm-hmm. they find an old D7,
that's right.
In the Delta Quadrant, right?
Yep.
And all those Klingons look the same, too. So.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, that's right. And that was actually a very good episode. And it was, it was an interesting approach to things. But yeah, so they kept it consistent. And I think that the tripping point was obviously when they decided to do that homage to Trouble with Tribbles for the anniversary. And, you know, as clever as an episode it was, I'm beginning to think that the beginning of all this debate really started to come in earnest around that point. I could be wrong, but I don't remember hearing a lot of people asking questions about humanoid Klingons until that episode came up, and they had to come up with a clever way, you know, and even, you know, Worf kind of saying, yeah, we don't discuss it, you know.
See, I thought that was brilliant, though. It's like a nod to the fans. Like,
yep.
Look, we know it's different.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna address it. It was a fun episode to begin with.
Right.
And leave it at that, right? It's like, okay,
right.
They addressed it. Let's move on from it. That's funny.
Yeah.
And they never talk about it again. But then, like, it's true Star Trek fan fashion. We just have to obsess over it. Like, oh, no, there has to be an explanation. And it ended up being one of... I think Bashir's like, because they're guessing, like, what happened? You know, him and O'Brien and Bashir, and Bashir's like, genetic mutation? I'm like, oh, did they, like, cling on to that? No pun intended. And use
right.
that as a spinning off point. And I think, you know, and I don't recall exactly what the quote is from Ronald D. Moore talking about this. I don't know if he said, like, they had considered just when they went to the past having Michael Dorn not have Klingon makeup, like, giving him original series makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, just, like, not even addressing it. That would have been another, like, kind of funny way to address it, I guess.
That would have been cool.
If he just, like, looked like he did pretty... You know, in the TNG episode Homeward?
Yeah.
Where I always think he looks like... Because he's dressed up like an alien that his adoptive brother is working on that planet, and he has to disguise himself as one. He always looks like, okay, if Michael Dorn was a TOS Klingon, he would look like he did in this episode. He's got a little bit of a goatee, you know, a little bit of a different face, but that's pretty much it. And I do it. Those are like your two options, I guess. You have to do it, right? Because, I mean, they're literally in scenes with Klingons from the original series. So you either do some joke like they did,
right,
or you do the makeup like I think they had considered. I fall on the side of the joke. It's a great one-liner.
It is.
And the show just left it at that. And I don't think anything's wrong with it. Like, I feel like they had to do it. So that's fine.
You couldn't ignore it.
But just at that point, just leave it. From that point forward, leave it alone. I don't know. Enterprise, they got into season four. I don't know who. I don't know if it was Manny Coto or who it was. Like, okay, now's our chance to explain. Because that's a huge deal. And we're kind of jumping all around the timeline here. But that's what we do on Saturday.
But that's
Harbor,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
But you go to Enterprise and you're like, oh, there's going to be a prequel series to TOS. Well, how are we going to see the Klingons? Like that, the minute that show was announced in like 2000 or 1999 or whenever it was, right? That is what the fans were talking about. And then the Klingons show up and they look like the next gen Klingons. Be like, what is this? And then for 3 years, everybody was like, oh no, guys, look, they were just always supposed to look that way. Just ignore how they looked in TOS. Embrace the in joke from Trials and Tribulations.
Right.
This is how they look. Do you really want them to look like they did in the 60s? Come on, right? It's the 21st century now. We have the technology. It would look ridiculous, right? And then we get to season four, and it was like the fan service season, for better and for worse. There's some great stuff, and there's some like, do we really need to like spell it out that much stuff in season four of Enterprise? But they went there. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know exactly whose idea it was, but I that that is where we have serious problems, because then you have an end universe, like then you kind of have to accept that there was a change, and there was a change back, and then you have like the guys from like Kor, Koloth, and Kang, like they had the virus, and they got smooth heads, and then they got cured, I guess, and then when they come back in Deep Space Nine, they look like the TNG Klingons, you know, and then you get, okay, and then on top of that, now we have Discovery, where it takes place contemporary with TOS, pre-OS, as we call it here on Standard Orbit. Mm-hmm. And you have Klingons. Not only do they not look like the 60s Klingons, they play like radically different. Honestly, they look more like the Kelvin timeline Klingons than anything else we saw in the prime timeline before. So that, so we are just all over the place with the appearance. And I don't know. It does get you're like a one timeline guy. I'm like a one Klingon guy. You know, I'm like, it's so confusing. Can we have just left it with one?
Yeah. Well, that was a pretty good. You walked us down the path, I think. So next week we'll be talking about, anyway.
I know. There you have it. Klingons aren't the only thing we're talking about in Trek this week. Anyway, so that's the stuff.
Yeah, we're all, you know, and I do understand the need and the drive to having consistency. And I know it drives some people crazy when things bump all over the map, right? And you have people and it's funny because unless I could fully understand how people see things, right? Everybody's so different. It's hard for me to understand why it's such a big deal. But there are things in Star Trek that are big deals to me too. That's just not one of them. And it is interesting when you look at, you know, I thought the Kelvin timeline, we really see them up close in some of the deleted scenes of 09, then of course in Into Darkness, you get a much better look at them. And they really don't look radically different. They look a little bit more like a combination of the motion picture and the newer ones from TNG up, I thought. But tighter. They didn't have huge heads or anything like mm-hmm. that. They were all bald. You know, they had the I guess the jewelry, so to speak, along their ridges and ears and stuff.
Yeah, the Blingons, as I've heard.
The Blingons, yeah, that's a pretty good term. And their eyes looked awesome. Right? I mean,
yes,
I thought it was like
eyes,
piercing.
Yes.
And it was like, man, do they look intimidating. And I like the helmets. I like the whole thing. And then when you you come into Discovery, they have the front of their faces look like they do a little bit from the Kelvin timeline, but their heads are much, much bigger. I mean, they are completely different. I mean, the back of their heads go way out, and you know, they have a very intimidating look, but in my opinion, a less of a realistic look. It's kind of funny to me that we have this very modern show, but the Klingons themselves, to me anyway, when you're looking right at their faces, they're fine. When you kind of pull back or whatnot, It definitely doesn't feel all that alien. It feels like they're in a costume to me. Don't kill me, but it's just how I feel. But I mean, they're definitely taking it in a new direction. So I think, you know, as we see these, we see in Discovery, they've definitely are being very consistent with how the Klingon culture is described and discussed and shown to us in TNG and in Deep Space Nine. There's no doubt about that. With some of the TOS elements from, you know, the leadership and the struggles that they have. But it's an interesting ride, to say the least. I just, you know, it was almost when we put this thing together, I was like, oh, it'd be cool if Zach didn't agree with me. But he does. So now we'll have some interesting discussions, I hope, on the Babel conference, because, you know, it is kind of a group think here right now, but it is interesting to see how other people take this and why it bothers folks from time to time.
Well, you talk about the visual look, you know, that's what we've been kind of focusing on. The Klingons, not only have they changed visually, they changed culturally, because in the original series, they were the Soviets, right? They were the you know, from the American mindset at the time, like the scheming, you know, undercover.
They were the
villains,
communists.
You know.
They were the Russians.
Yeah.
They were the, yeah.
So, but that but they didn't have this whole concept of honor and stuff like that. You know, I mean, they would do whatever it took. They were brutal. They were terrible bad guys. You know, as you described earlier, what Kirk was talking about. And then you get to TNG, and okay, but yeah, I mean, in TOS, the Romulans were the honorable ones. They had the code. You know, Balance of Terror is all about the guy. You know. Blowing himself up at the end, all that stuff. And they were more of a regal or whatever you want to call it. But then you get to TNG, and it's almost like they kind of flip it, where the Romulans are like the scheming, conniving ones, hiding in the shadows, that kind of stuff, spies and whatnot. And because in the original series, the Klingons had spies. That's a big deal. You know, and they've brought that back, you know, the plastic surgery to create undercover spies. And then, but then in TNG, you know, the Klingons are the ones with the honor code and this and that, and, you know, the Romulans are without honor and all that stuff. And it's interesting that, like, there was just a huge shift from what we had in TOS to what the Klingons are in TNG, and that has carried through and now carried back when you go to Enterprise and Discovery, because there's so much Klingons in the 24th century era. That is what people think about, and that's what you kind of have to base things off of as you move forward, because that's what people know. And the thing about that is it all comes down, as we have determined here, again, it all comes down to Star Trek III, right? Star Trek III is the pivot point for all this stuff, right? Because you have so much of what Klingons are in the 24th century and everything is informed by Star Trek III. It's like, we are Klingons, right? I mean, I feel like that is carried through. So much, right? Yes. All that stuff. You know, the Klingon language, everything. I mean, it was a little bit in the motion picture. But, you know, with the motion picture, you see them so little, you can just assume they're just the same as they were in COS, mm-hmm. right? You know, Soviet stand-ins, conniving, all, you know, whatever you want to call it, whatever the adjectives are for them back then. But then you get to Star Trek 3, and they're like, there's...
Yeah, shoot.
Yeah, exactly. They're shooting first. There's something, oh, we don't understand it. Let's shoot it, right?
Right.
But that's within character, right? So then you go to the Klingons, and... The ironic thing in Star Trek III is these are renegade Klingons. You know, they're not necessarily representations of their whole race, but because that's what we saw as the audience, that becomes the definition. Because, you know, Christopher Lloyd and his crew, he like defined what Klingons were, you know, and you know, his whole crew and all this whole My Lord stuff with the Klingons. And and then those were supposed to be Romulans. So I feel like that's kind of where the beginnings of the switcheroo was with like what these guys did. And then you extrapolate that, and then Nick Meyer comes back for Star Trek VI, kind of reinforces the Soviet metaphor,
right?
Because it's the Cold War in space, and that's really cool, and a great kind of historical and cultural touchstone to explain why, because that's the great thing. So that's jumping all around the timeline together, right? Star Trek VI is a great way to fill in and explain a gap, because we had TOS where they're enemies, TNG comes out in 87, they're friends now, right? But we had not become friends with the Klingons yet, and from our perspective as the audience, right? Because that's Star Trek IV.
Right.
So let's explain how we became friends. Oh, look, here it is, Star Trek VI, and that's a great way to explain it, and very deftly handled.
Yep.
So I feel like that shift between like their culture, but then also like the relationships between the Federation and the Klingons was pretty smooth and required, right? But then... The parent stuff was like, you guys kind of botched it. You could have left it alone. It didn't need to be addressed. Because stuff like the Klingons were your enemy, now you're their friend, that needs to be addressed. Stuff like, hey, the special effects change, why they look different, doesn't really need to be addressed, in my opinion. So,
Yeah, I agree. A couple of things you said that you're absolutely right on, how they flipped the Romulan culture and the Klingon culture. Just at another level, too, the cloaking device was always looked at as Romulan. And that the assumption was when the Klingons and the Romulans became allies, the Romulans shared cloaking technology with the Klingons, right? So you're right, Star Trek III flipped all that. But even now, in the most modern era of Star Trek, it's like the cloaking technology is all Klingon, right? I mean, it's just amazing to me, you know, even before, I guess, in a sense, cloaks were even understood or being utilized. You know, another kind of one of those weird things with, I hate the word canon, but that's the only thing you can, it's the only thing you can kind of use, I guess. It just sounds like a term when used when you're talking about movies or entertainment, an odd term, let's just put it that way. Not a bad term, but just an odd term. But I would just say historically, you know, it was always kind of the Romulans game. These were the high tech kind of sneaky folks that par for par with the Federation. The Klingons were there. They were bad guys. They had technology, but you didn't get the, you know, if they wanted something, it sounded to me like they would just steal it. Right? And that's how they kind of accumulated their technology.
Well, and they even talk about that. Like, I believe it was the Herc was the species that had, and this is, you know, Deep Space Nine now, mm-hmm. but they had kind of enslaved the Klingons, and the Klingons rose up and overthrew them, and they kind of took their technology. And that makes a lot of sense. You're like, how do these like kind of brute warriors,
right,
you know, invent all this technology? And, oh, they just kind of, much like how the Mirror Universe ends up taking the technology, right? And right. The Enterprise, and now Discovery, right, as we learned. So there are ways to do it, guys. There's retconning that's cool. So what we're trying to explain here is that we're cool with these explanations when they do it kind of right. We're not saying, no, it has to be the way it was in the 60s all the time. But some things just don't need to be explained, and that's one of them. So I know, sorry, I don't disagree with you, Cannon.
No, that's quite all right, buddy. I mean, you never know where these things are going to go, and that's why I think it's good to kind of discuss forth, and hopefully, you know, because it's very relevant with what's going on in Discovery, that it'll be a good talking point on the Babel conference, because it's already started to a certain degree. Right. By the time this airs, it will be a couple of weeks past the season finale, and we'll see where everything else lines up, and maybe there'll be some surprises there. But
yeah, what'd you think about the Enterprise showing up? No, I'm just kidding. Call my shot now. Rob Lowe is Christopher Pike. You heard it here first.
Rob Lowe is Christopher Pike. Well, whatever.
Think about it, huh? He looks like Jeffrey Hunter. So if the Enterprise ever shows up on Discovery, he should be Captain Pike. So, because clearly they're not using the Kelvin timeline actors. If they were, I'd be all about Bruce Greenwood. But anyway. That, you know, speaking of Discovery, though, that is one thing that kind of bothered me. It's like in the pilot for Discovery, right? It's like, oh, look, the Klingon ship decloaked. I'm like, no. Okay, now I'm going to put on my fanboy cannon hat and say, look, guys, someone is confused here because the Klingons did not cloak until after the Romulan Klingon Alliance. And then somebody's like, of course, the defense for that is, oh, that wasn't established on screen. It's like, yeah, guys, but it's been part of like fanon for like 50 years. You know,
right.
So it was kind of that of all the changes in Discovery, like to your point, Ken, like to seeing the Klingons have like they had cloaks just like the Romulans, like that annoyed me because it makes sense.
Well, it was
the Romulans
just,
to
in
have
fairness,
it
was just one ship, right? And
yes,
you know, then that technology got shared, and it was hundreds and hundreds of years old, which I thought was also very interesting.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like this is an ancient ship. I'm like, how long have they had this technology, right? I just anyway. Yeah. That's if all the nitpicks of Discovery, that's the one of the ones that annoys me the most. But does it not make sense for the Romulans to have cloaking technology, but not the Klingons? Is the Klingons, is that not the most dishonorable thing you can do? It's sneak around, you know, uncloak, destroy somebody, cloak, and run away, right? That's not what the Klingons end up being, right?
That's an interesting approach. You know, there's a whole rules of war piece to, I think, this show that works interestingly on both sides. And I think that will be a great topic one of these days when we start talking about, you know, ethics and fighting. And, you know, as I've said before, you know, the Federation has been demonstrated, which I think is kind of ironic the way the writers write it a lot, is that the way it's set up is extraordinarily noble, but not sustainable.
Hmm.
And, you know, just like in yesterday's Enterprise, so the Federation always gets its ass kicked. You know, and I just kind of laugh at it. It's like, yeah, well, you know, this is kind of how you're setting things up. You know, but anyway,
maybe if you guys use cloaking devices, you wouldn't be losing your war. So.
Well, that's right. I mean, it is kind of funny. I mean, TOS, it was kind of like everybody was doing what happens today, trying to keep up with each other's technology as a deterrent for war. Whereas, you know, I think as time went on, the Federation was allowing its enemies to gain, and their willingness not to accept the technology as saying, hey, we're not a threat, and using that as a deterrent for war. And that just never works. So.
Yeah, taking the moral high ground is never effective when you're in an active war.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. Good will never live off the charity of evil. Just doesn't work. And it's just an interesting concept. But boy, did we go off the rails on that one. But that's fine. That's fine. So, you know, I think to kind of summarize this whole thing, Zach, that you and I are definitely aligned. And I love, you know, the Klingons, and I always have. I know there was a lot of people before Discovery came on was saying, you know, gee, I hope it's not the Klingons again, right? Because it's always the Klingons, and we're tired of the Klingons.
Again with the Klingons.
Yeah, again with the Klingons. However, you know, they are a formidable foe. I think they're the antithesis in our era of Star Trek of what the Federation stands for. I think the evolution of the alignment between the two within TNG says a lot. I think it's a very positive thing. I was almost, I was kind of depressed when in Deep Space Nine they became enemy factions again for a while, mm-hmm. right?
That was the point, though, right? That stung, that hurt, because you spent seven plus years like, oh, these are our friends, and now like, oh, now they're not. So
that's right, because you build it up, and it's like, yeah, okay, you know, this is pretty awesome. And then when it went the other way, now, you know, obviously it's discovered there's a reason all that happened, but mm-hmm. and it circles back. It's just one of those things where it's like, ah, you know, you don't like to see things get built up and then down. But if they're going to be bad guys, they are great bad guys. The Romulans, mm-hmm. they're just not that we all love the Vulcans. Mm-hmm. They're just not that intimidating, even with the unexplained new foreheads that they gain in TNG.
let's talk about that. People have a problem. People have a problem with the. Let's go completely off topic. People have a problem with the Klingons changing their appearance. I have a problem with the Romulans changing their appearance. Why? The whole point of the Romulans and the Vulcans. This is like the point of why they look alike. It's like, so they can get, you know, they get confused. People think Spock might be a Romulan right when you see the Romulans for the first time.
Yeah.
And then in TNG, it's like, oh no, they evolved this random forehead in the last, you know, 80 years or something. Like, what? Like, that, where's the augmented virus on the Romulans, right? Like, that's, I don't know if they, like, I don't know why they needed to do that, because I felt like, oh, we upgraded the Klingons, I guess we should upgrade the Romulans too. Like, that's the only explanation I can think of why they added that silly extra forehead bridge or brow or whatever.
It's one of the areas, I think a lot of the plot points with the Romulans were very good. A lot of the storylines were very good. I don't think they did well with the makeup in the uniforms at all. Oh, yes. They just missed the boat. The sets with the ships and everything I thought were fine. The bridge sets and the design of the Romulan ship I thought was great.
Yeah, the Warburg is amazing.
Yeah, I thought it was all good, but it just was kind of a swing and a miss, I thought, on that aspect of it. And again, you know, sometimes we try to modernize things and sometimes it works. I think like the Klingons. And then, you know, with the Romulans, it really just didn't work out that well.
Well, the thing with the Romulans is they look the same in the original series movies, right? You have, mm-hmm. you don't see very many, but you see actually a couple of ambassadors, right, in Star Trek V and then Star Trek VI.
Right.
You see the Romulans, and they look just like they did in TOS. So even the Romulan, but he has like the sash and everything, you know, it's a different color or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then you go to, so TNG changed that themselves. Like, right. Well, that's on you, TNG, you know, because if you look at TOS, obviously, motion picture, Star Trek 3, Star Trek 4, they had already changed the way the Klingons look. So obviously, TNG just kind of picked that up and ran with it, right?
Right.
But they decided on their own to, like, oh, we need to upgrade the Romulans too. So don't look at us, guys. We did it right. Original series through Star Trek 6, no problems. Even the Kelvin timeline, right?
They just haven't talked much about them. On them. That's it.
They put some tattoos on them and shaved their heads because what I can only assume, and it was the same logic of why they changed it from Romulans, the Klingons in Star Trek 3 was like, oh, hey, look, if we don't make these guys look significantly different than like Spock and Sarek and all these Vulcans, people are going to get confused. The general audience goer. That's my thinking. So that's why they look so radically
different. In the pre-story or the comic the books that countdown. Came out.
Yeah.
The primer or whatever before the movies came out, the Romulans did indeed look like the Romulans, but this band, you know, shaved and added the tattoos as part of their little cult-like fashion of getting the revenge on the Federation and Vulcan in particular. So there was a detailed explanation for it.
An in-universe explanation, I agree with that. The logic behind why they needed to look different in the first place was, oh, we need to make these guys look different. So it's very odd, because there's a lot of Vulcans in Star Trek 09, you know.
There are.
So they're like, we got to make sure people understand the difference between the Vulcans and the Romulans. But they didn't have these forehead Vs. You know, so good on you for all the changes people want to complain about. J.J. Abrams made. He made the didn't give the Romulans forehead Vs. So hashtag forehead gate, Ken.
Forehead gate. Okay, I like it. There you go, man. Well, we were talking about Klingons. We've gone into Romulans. Well, see, there's another show we can't do. Nice job, Zach.
Got to stay in our lane.
We can't do part two. You know, what happened to the Romulans? But they weren't very prominent at all in the TOS movies. I mean,
no, and I wish they would have been. I mean, obviously that they changed. Leonard Nimoy wanted to change it because Harv Bennett wrote Romulans in the script, so he had Bird of Prey. He thought the Klingons were more their big bad guy, and again, not confusing Vulcans with Klingons because we had more. We had Spock, we had Savick. You know, we had multiple Vulcans. So I don't know. I really wish we could have seen like a movie era. like Romulan ships and something like that, some kind of story. Right? I don't know what, because the Romulans in the flesh, they appear twice on TOS, three times with their ships. Balance of Terror and Enterprise Incident, like, are both on my top 10 list, and I believe are pretty much on most people's top 10 list, right? So, very well regarded, very well remembered, very great enemy. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be great to see them. I don't know what capacity, right? But I mean, because the Klingons kind of dominated the they were in literally every TOS movie, even in Star Trek II, because we see them in the Kobayashi Maru. So
yeah, we do, yeah.
So there's no space. There was really no space for the Romulans, unfortunately, other than those supporting roles in the last couple movies.
No, no.
I would have loved to see them.
We know that if when the Romulans are pulled in and made a big part of the plot, like they were in Nemesis, the movie's just outstanding. So
that's a very good point. even Deep Space Nine, who went into who like they brought in the Klingons, they brought in all these major roles. Like even the Romulans, they were kind of there, but they still didn't really dive into them. I don't know what it is.
It's
about
a
that.
Fake is probably the biggest line ever in DS9.
It's a fake.
It's a fake. Right? That's probably one of the biggest the memes you see out there. So it's kind of exciting. So, they've had their day. And they did all right in STO9, I thought. So.
Mm-hmm. No, it's the Klingons, the Romulans, I guess they're all kind of, much like in the Starship universe itself, they are forever intricately tied together.
Yes.
There's all these alliances, and that's cool too. I think about the Klingon culture is that they are they're doing their own thing out there. They're not just existing, they're not stagnant. They're changing, they're making alliances here and there. You know, even TNG did it, TOS did it as well. They align with Romulans and Federation people for their own nefarious ends. I mean, like I say in Star Trek VI, it's ironic that they in order to, keep the two cultures from working together and becoming allies, they ally themselves with the other cultures to keep separate. Like, it's the great irony of Star Trek VI, right? But that shows they are sophisticated. You know, they're not just the generic Klingon that they started to kind of delve into in later in the 21st century. You know, that they're maneuvering, they're scheming, that kind of stuff, more like the TOS Klingons, right? So there's a lot more of the TOS Klingons in the TOS movies, even though they have the appearance of the later era, right? 21st century Klingons. So people can oversimplify them, right? They're like, again with the Klingons, right? But they're pretty layered, you know? And then, of course, Discovery has opened up a whole new world for the Klingons, and we'll see how they continue to be, because they were such a huge part of the beginning of this season. Now they kind of made their Mirror Universe side quest. Now they're back to the main storyline. They're going to wrap that up, and I'm interested to see how they evolve the look and the relations with the Klingons as Discovery continues as a show.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. And, of course, we're all going to be extraordinarily impatient as we wait for the show to come back.
Yeah, I don't know when is there an announcement of when, like, season, I don't know, it's season one's just ended, and we're like, when's season two? But those are fans for you, right? Like, I haven't even heard a timetable of when they might be back.
I don't know where I heard, but they were talking about starting up next January, and I'm like, oh, God, I hope not. But we'll see. You know, I don't even know when they...
That's great. That gives us, 9 months of... shows or people.
Hey, there we go. Right, there's an optimistic piece of it. It's all about you, and it's all about you and me, Zach. When it all comes down to it,
Standard Orbit is back.
About this huge universe of Star. It all comes back to Standard Orbit and where we all fit in this great cacophony of Star Trek podcasts and episodes and movies and shows. Yes, yes, yes. Excellent.
Well, talking about the Klingons and the Romulans and everything in between isn't the only thing we're doing on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what else you might have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Literary Treks.
But let's start with that first one, that Siege in Superspace. So, oh boy. Superspace, I don't know, is this better than subspace? Is it...
Well, I think it is. The thing I really love about this issue is we haven't had many stories at all about super space.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Right. So, okay, they're under orders. They're not supposed to talk about it, and that's how you maintain the continuity that Kirk and Spock are surprised that there's a mirror universe. I mean, that works. That makes sense. But these people were there. They know that there's doppelgangers there, because they know that because Cadet Tilly became Captain Killy, right? They know this.
To the journey!
There was a lot of face melting in this episode, you're right.
Everyone's melting, what a world. It was, yeah, and everybody was slimy looking. Why were they so sweaty? Why?
Seven of Nine had this full-on Borg Queen look about her.
She did, and who else was really sweaty looking besides Seven?
Neelix was really sweaty looking. Neelix,
well, yeah, I thought he was.
And he had kind of a silver tone. He had the silver blood coming through.
He did, like, he was distinguished. Distinguished melting Neelix.
Yes. Yeah, he got a buff and polish.
The 602 Club.
No, I mean, it was really all we had was, like, animated shows. Like, you had, like, the animated Batman series, the animated Superman series, and as far as the big screen went, it was not so great. I mean, you had Blade. Blade was... Some people cite Blade as kind of the precursor for the superhero genre picking back up, but it was very much kind of a genre film. I know technically it is a comic book film. I don't know if I'd count it in the realm of, like, big budget superhero movies.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Speaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit Patreon, that's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more available through our special patrons website, Patreon Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month, so we really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. We also want to thank very, very much our esteemed associate producers, Norman C. Lau, Nicholas Anastasio, Tim Robertson, Richard Marquez, Corey Elrod, and Dan Rhodes. So Norm, Nick, Tim, Richard, Corey, and Dan, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. It means as much as we can possibly tell you the world to us that you've agreed to sign on and help keep Standard Orbit alive and well.
Yes, thank you so much, guys. We really do appreciate all your contributions. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Standard Orbit. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. As for us personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach, that's MoreOnZach. And I'm also the host of my own show called Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman show. You can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. What about you, Ken?
Well, you can find me on Twitter as well at Boston, S-C-P-O, stands for at Boston Senior Chief Petty Officer. And I'm also on the Babel Conference whenever I can be, engaging and trying to add, you know, a lot of good provocative suggestions to our other shows. But anyway, we look forward to seeing you on the Babel Conference and responding back and forth on this show as well.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us this week. But stay tuned next time for another edition of Standard Orbit.